Anarchopreneur, episode number 39, why scarcity is actually a good thing. You don't want to miss this one. Here we go.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism. God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
What is up, Free Market Squad? We are back in the house, and I am amped up on coffee right now. So I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to be in your ear holes. Oh God, it feels so good to be up in your ear holes. Thank you for taking an hour out of your week to spend some time with me. I am, of course, your host with the Hero Complex, Nathan Frazier. This is the Nathan Frazier Show. We're broadcasting on the Truth Frequency Radio Network, UCY.TV, LRN.FM. You can find more over at NathanFrazierShow.com. Go on iTunes and subscribe, like, and review the show. And of course, who cares about me? You're the ones who are important. You are the Free Market Squad. Welcome back to another episode, Free Market Squad. I'm glad to be hanging with you this week. This week, I have got a lot to get through, so I'm just going to go ahead and jump into it. We're going to be talking about scarcity this week. Now, this is a touchy subject, both in the political, economic realms, and in marketing, and I'm going to be addressing this one subject from all three angles this week. So the whole entire show is going to be about scarcity, and I'm going to start with the Live Free FM Focus on Freedom segment of the show, and I'm going to talk about scarcity from the political and economic sense or perspective, because this is something that you guys know me, I'm a free market anarchist. I believe in free markets and free minds and free people, and I am a devout capitalist. And inside of capitalism, inside of the debate between the Zeitgeist movement type folks and the Venus Project folks, and then also the anarcho-capitalist community as well, there's this huge debate about scarcity. And there's within the quote-unquote anarchist umbrella, there are the like Venus Project, Zeitgeist movement type anarchists. I typically consider them to be basically computer communists, but they call themselves post-scarcity anarchists. And so we're going to talk about the idea of post-scarcity to start off the show. I do not believe in post-scarcity. I don't think we'll ever have a post-scarcity environment, economy, reality, and society. And that's because there will always be scarcity. There might not be energy scarcity like there is today. There might not be food scarcity like there is today. But there will always be scarcity. Even if, like, tomorrow somebody unlocked the secrets of Nikola Tesla and was able to get them out to the entire world, and a year from now everybody had free energy generators in their homes, there'd still be scarcity. Maybe not scarcity of energy, maybe not scarcity of food. There'd definitely be scarcity of resources still. There'd still be only so many beachfront properties, and there'd still be a lot more people wanting to live by the beach than would actually be possible, because there's only so much beachfront property. There'd still be scarcity for time. Time is like probably the ultimate scarce resource. So even if all of our other needs were taken care of, food, housing, energy, we'd still have to bargain for each other's time. We'd still have to, if you wanted me to come and teach you something and I didn't feel like doing a mass broadcast webinar, I felt like doing just some one-on-one time with people, you would have to bargain with me for my time as opposed to somebody else who also wanted my time. Entertainers, not just teachers, entertainers will still be in demand. There's a book called The Diamond Age. One of my favorite books was recently actually replaced as my favorite fiction book. I just got done reading Ready Player One, and that book was amazing. Up until then, I think Diamond Age was probably my favorite fiction book. But Ready Player One, that book is just awesome. If you're into fiction, sci-fi style books, Ready Player One is just so amazing. I'm still like still coming down from the glow of the just the great experience that that book delivered. But in the Diamond Age, back to the book I was initially talking about, in the Diamond Age, they have like feeds that create pretty much everything. They've got like matter compilers. It's set in the future, very near future, where 3D printers have basically become like they put in the means of production into the hands of the people, literally without going all communist, and people can create whatever they want. And so in that book, production and most production like jobs have been completely eliminated. And so the main source of employment that still exists is entertainment. So even in a society where people have food delivered to them, people have beds and clothing and everything just printed up out of little machines in their houses, entertainers are still in demand. So time and one-on-one contact with people will always be something that will be scarce. There's no way around that. Adam Kokesh talks about electronic psychotherapists, like little robot therapists and all of that. When I call customer service, I hate automated services. It doesn't matter how great they are. I want that one-on-one human contact with somebody that I know is a human being on the other end. And until they've got a robot that can pass the Turing test, I don't think that the need for human beings, the need for each other's time, will ever reach that post-scarcity utopia that a lot of the post-scarcity anarchists wish to achieve. Another example of this, I just recently saw a story. I don't know who put the story out. I want to say it was from Entrepreneur Magazine, but it was about a guy who started up a business in Los Angeles walking people for a living. Like, he'll just walk with you and talk with you. And I think he charges like $7 a mile, and you just pay him for his time to walk with you. And he listens to you. And if you ask him for feedback, he'll give you his opinion about stuff. The point is people will always be willing to bargain for each other's time. And that's just the way it is. The thing about scarcity is, I don't know if I really want to move to a post-scarcity environment, because scarcity makes us appreciate things more. Here's a little personal, actually two little personal stories that I'm going to share with you real quick. So I have a buddy, Mike, and he let me borrow the new Star Wars movie, which I didn't go to see at the movie theaters. And I actually hadn't watched until just recently, just the other night I watched it. The thing is, he let me borrow that movie like 2-3 months ago, before I moved out of my old place and into this new place. He let me borrow that movie and I didn't watch it. It sat there and just kind of collected dust. And, the other night, I don't know, 3 nights ago, he told me, "Hey, next time I see you, I want that movie back." And so all of a sudden, my time with that movie was limited. The amount of time that I had with that movie was scarce. And what did I do? I went home, I popped it in my computer, and I watched the DVD. For like 3 or 4 months, I didn't even think twice about watching that movie. And then the moment that he adds scarcity to it, I go home and I watch it. Another example of this is Ben Settle, who was on the show a couple episodes back. If you missed that one, phenomenal talk that Ben gave. So go and check that out. But Ben was running on Labor Day. He was running a sale for just a ginormous amount of copywriting material that him and Michael Sinoff of Hard to Find Seminars were putting together. And it was like $500 or $400 worth of learning materials. And they were selling it for that one day for, I think, $20. Or I think they were selling it all weekend, but I waited until that last day. And the sale ended at 12 o'clock Pacific time. And I didn't actually click the buy button until 12:24 my time, which is mountain time. So I had like 36 minutes left before the deadline, before I finally decided to pay the $20 and purchase the material. I saw the previous emails telling me about the sale. I clicked on them. I read through them. I thought it would be a great deal, but I didn't actually follow through. I didn't take the action that I knew I probably should, because $20 for all of it was just an incredible deal. But I didn't click buy until there was like 36 minutes left. And then I decided, okay, I need to buy this. And so I got up out of bed, went over to my computer, logged on, and actually clicked buy. And here's the deal. The next morning, I downloaded all of the audio. I downloaded all of the books that came with it. And I've been working my way through it like a madman. And, well, I'll get more into that in a second. So another example of scarcity and appreciation, think about like rich kids, like spoiled rich kids who get like a brand new car when they graduate high school, or get everything they've ever wanted handed to them on a silver platter. They typically don't appreciate any of the stuff that's handed to them. They start to get this self-entitled attitude. They start to feel like they just deserve. They just don't appreciate the things that they have. Maybe not all of them, but a majority of them. This is something that really plagues like wealthy families, is when a mother and a father work their asses off to get what they get, and then they try to hand it off to the children. The children don't appreciate it, and usually whatever the mom and dad worked for just goes to rot. And typically by the third generation, the children's children are pretty much in the same boat that the children were in. Don't appreciate things, don't appreciate the hard work it takes to get those things. And by the third generation, everything that the first generation was able to accumulate and acquire has been pretty much pissed away. And so that's why you see most hardworking entrepreneurial type people that build these giant businesses, unless they leave the company to a CEO, or smart business owners or business managers. If they try to leave it to their kids and leave their fortunes to their kids, the kids usually squander it away. And you go from rags to riches and back to rags again within about three generations. But the fact is the reason this happens is because those rich kids don't appreciate what's been made so abundant for them, because there's no scarcity to it. You take a kid who's had to work all the way through high school and save up money, and by the time he graduates, he's able to buy himself a new car and start working, or maybe buy himself a new car and go off to college on his own dime or her own dime. Not trying to be sexist here. That kid is going to appreciate that car way more than a spoiled little rich kid who just had that car handed to him. It's just the way it is. If something's scarce to us, we tend to appreciate it more. Also, like I was talking about with the seminar or the learning course that I got from Ben Settle, immediately that next day when I woke up, the first thing I did was go through and downloaded all the audio and downloaded all the PDFs that came with the course. And I've been digging through it. I've spent hours and hours studying this stuff because I had skin in the game, because it wasn't just handed to me for free, because there was some scarcity to it, because it was only available to me because I took 20 of my own dollars, which was actually a huge deal. Compared to what I got out of the course. But because I took 20 of my own dollars and paid for it, because there was scarcity, because it wasn't just, here, sign up for my email list and get this free amount of all this. If it was just free, if it was just like, hey, sign up for my email list and I'll give you all of these courses, I probably wouldn't have taken them. But because I actually had to put skin in the game, because there was an element of scarcity, only the people who could afford $20 to buy it got it. And because I traded 20, you know, my own time, $20 is not very much of my own time, but because I traded my own time, my own labor, I actually took some money that I got for writing and invested it in a course that'll make me a better writer. But because I took my own money and put it in and put my own skin in the game, immediately I took what I had bought and I took it more seriously. I appreciated it more. And this is the same thing with that I've noticed from giving out free courses versus paid courses. When I've sold courses in the past, the amount of people that actually show up and go through them is a significantly higher percentage than people that just get the free course. A lot of times when I do free courses, not always, but a lot of times when I do free courses, the amount of people that actually take the course all the way through the end is like in the lower 30s. But when I do a paid course, the amount of people that take the course all the way through the end is like in the high 80s, the high 90s. And also the people who take action on the course, take the information that they learned and actually implement it, is significantly higher when people pay for the courses versus when I give the courses away for free. So scarcity and having people pay for things, in my opinion, is not such a bad thing. Also, we're living in a society right now where capitalism has provided so much for people that they really don't appreciate all of the stuff that they have. I mean, people live better than kings lived 300 years ago in the current capitalist societies of the world. People live better than kings lived 300 years ago, and the majority of them can just bitch and complain. That's all they can do is, well, there's still people who have more than me, and it's not fair. I want to live like the 1% does. They need to give their wealth to me. Like, by making so much, because capitalism has made so many of like the modern goods available on such a mass scale, a lot of the people don't even appreciate the amazing things that they have at their fingertips right now. And so again, scarcity, in my opinion, is, it has its benefits, and maybe it's not all good, but there are good things to it. And also, like, just think of the fact that we live in like a society where participation trophies and entitlement abound. Like, you get trophies just for showing up. It used to be that only the first place person got a trophy. The second and third place people got a ribbon, a second place ribbon, or second and third place ribbon or something. Now everybody gets a trophy just for showing up, just for participating. And what does that do to the trophies? It incredibly diminishes the value of the trophies. Look at college educations. The more easily you make it for, I mean, we have so many people going to college right now that just don't belong in college. They have no business actually being in college. They're taking worthless liberal arts degrees and gender studies degrees and completely diminishing the value of a college education, completely diminishing the value of a diploma, because it's no longer scarce. It's become overly abundant. And when something becomes overly abundant, society as a whole doesn't value it as much anymore. Think about like a video game. If you could just play a video game and you could get the high score just by holding down on the right arrow button the whole time, how many people would actually play that video game? Like how awesome would it be to see your name in the high score if you didn't have to jump over any enemies, if you didn't have to jump over any holes or solve any puzzles to get that high score? All you had to do was show up and press a button and hold down that button until you got to the end of the game. Like, that would be a video game I would have zero interest in playing. And most people would have zero interest in playing. But for some reason, economically, we think that the equivalent of that would be a good thing. And I don't agree. That doesn't mean I'm like, you know, it doesn't mean that we need to ignore struggle and that we shouldn't seek to improve society and we shouldn't seek to improve the abundance of things that can improve livelihoods. But it does mean, in my opinion, we need to appreciate what we have and we need to learn how to work with what we have rather than against it. And scarcity is what we have. Scarcity is a fact of the natural universe. So rather than trying to eliminate it, rather than trying to work against it, I say value scarcity, appreciate scarcity, and learn how to work with it. All right, that's my Live Free FM Focus on Freedom rant for this week. I don't have my bumpers for, I promised I would have my bumpers for the segments and I don't. I'm a big fat liar. So I'm just going to jump into Nathan Frazierland, what's been going on in my own little section of the flat earth. Just kidding. I have not bought into the flat earth. my own little section of the globe, Nathan Frazierland. So actually, well, you know, maybe at first I was thinking it was an uneventful week, but now that I'm thinking about it, pretty awesome week so far. So like I said, I got that course from the from Ben Settle and Michael Sinoff, and I have been burning through all of the educational materials on that. I've gone through and listened to a couple of this of the audios a couple of times, and I'm going through and reading. Now that I'm done reading Ready Player One, I'm going through and I'm reading the written materials that came with that course and just learning so much. So that's been awesome. Also, I did land an editing gig for a promotional email. And even though it was a one-time thing, it's probably going to turn into more work. So I got paid for the amount of time that I put into it, I got paid a pretty decent amount of money for it. So that was pretty nice. And like I said, hopefully it'll turn into more work. That would be dope. And then other huge news, two things. First of all, I got hit up on Facebook by somebody who does production for Jedi Mind Tricks and does production for nonfiction. So nonfiction is like Ill Bill and a bunch of other cats. They do very political style of music. Jedi Mind Tricks, of course, anybody who knows Jedi Mind Tricks knows that they also do very political music. These two groups were some of my favorite groups when me and my brother used to do rap music. They were some of the groups that I always looked up to and always wanted to maybe emulate or want to. I dreamed of like sharing the stage with these cats when I was younger. And I just got hit up this week by one of the guys that does production for that whole clique and wants to take a clip, audio clip from this show, actually. So a long time ago, I said something to the extent of there are two types of people in this world. People who think that the government is looking out for their best interests and people who think. And for some reason, that quote just like exploded on the internet and went viral. And I've seen it be turned into like 15 different memes. And I see it like every couple of weeks, somebody tags me in it. It's been posted somewhere else and somebody tags me in it and says, "Hey, Nathan, somebody took your quote again and put it on the internet." And one of the guys that does production, he makes the background beats for those groups. He came across that and hit me up on Facebook and he wants me to re-record that audio clip. And he wants to put it in a couple or at least one song, either for nonfiction or for the Jedi Mind Tricks. And that is freaking awesome. That made me so stoked. So I've got to get on that. I've got to get that recorded and get it sent off to him. And potentially, hopefully, in the very near future, my quote will be featured on a song from one of my two all-time favorite rap groups. So that would be super, super awesome. The other super cool thing that is going on in Nathan Fraser land is last week I reached out to somebody who, in my opinion, is probably like the greatest copywriter of all time, or at least one of the top five greatest copywriters of all time. David Garfinkel, who I'm drawing a blank right now. I can't even think of where I first came across his work, but he's probably been one of my biggest mentors without actually knowing him personally. I've probably learned more about copywriting from him than pretty much anybody else. I'm in a secret Facebook group with Ben Settle, and Ben brought David into the group, and I started talking with David about the education system, actually, which is a weird topic for a copywriter to be interested in. But he said that he'd be willing to come on the show and give his thoughts about the problems with the current education system in America, and also talk about some copywriting and some sales tactics. And so that is going to be awesome. Next week, I'm actually recording it this upcoming Thursday. So the next episode, if all things go as according to plan, we're going to be having David Garfinkel, who's like I said, one of the top five all-time copywriting masters of all time, is going to be here on the Nathan Fraser Show. I'm just so freaking stoked about that. I can barely contain myself. In fact, I think there's a commercial coming up very soon. I can no longer contain myself. I'm going to be taking a bathroom break real quick. When we come back, we're going to get back into scarcity, and I'm going to lay out, I've kind of fleshed out why I don't think scarcity is a bad thing. I'm going to lay out how you can utilize scarcity in your marketing. When we come back on the other side of the commercial break, this is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Free people.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. You like listening to podcasts, don't you? Have you ever thought about starting a podcast of your own? If you're a hardcore podcast fan, you probably have, and you've probably got something great to share with the world. I'm Nathan Fraser, and I've created a free online podcasting course for people just like you. Pre-Launch Secrets gives you the top five secrets you need to know in order to launch a successful podcast. You'll learn how to create the core concept of your podcast, how to build a solid audience, and how to consistently generate great content for that audience. These are the secrets the pros use when coming up with ideas for their podcasts. And after this course, you'll have them all at your disposal. The course is free. It's taught by me. Enroll today. Go to podcastblastoff.com/course. That's podcastblastoff.com/course. Podcast Blastoff, the future of podcasting.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge. $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handy Car's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
And we're back, Free Market Squad. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show. We're broadcasting on the Truth Frequency Radio Network, UCY.TV, LRN.FM, and of course, if you're interested in finding more of this type of material, you can check out NathanFraserShow.com. Used to be LiveFreeFM.com. Now it's NathanFraserShow.com, the official home of this here podcast. I am your host with the Hero Complex. My name is Nathan Fraser, but you, more importantly, you are the Free Market Squad, and we have got some, I've got something awesome for you. I posted some of this in a blog post a while back, and the response was so good, and it tied in with the front half of this week's show, so I'm going to go ahead and recover some of this material in a podcast episode, because Well, okay, so here's something, just real quick, a side tangent. Repurposing material. A lot of times we think, well, if I have a Facebook and a Twitter account, I have to put different things on the two different platforms because people don't want to see the same post that on Twitter as they saw on Facebook. I disagree with that. I constantly, if I don't use Twitter too much, but if a post is short enough and gets a good response on Facebook, I'll go an hour later and post it on Twitter because some people follow me on Twitter. Some people follow me on Facebook. Not very many people follow me on both. So the likelihood of them seeing it in both areas is not too likely. The likelihood is not too likely. Great, great grammar. Can you believe people pay me to write for a living? I can't, but it happens. So that's pretty awesome. Same thing with blog posts and podcast episodes. If a blog post does well, why not turn it into a podcast? Some people will sit down and read a blog post and they won't listen to podcasts because they just haven't discovered how awesome podcasts are yet. Some people will listen to a podcast episode, but they can't stand staring at a computer monitor. So you can have the greatest content in the world in a blog post, but one of your podcast listeners will never, ever hear about it. Same thing with emails. If I have an email that has a giant open rate and a giant click-through rate and gets the response that I'm looking for, I'll take that email and I'll rewrite it as a blog post, or I'll take that email and I'll repurpose it as a podcast episode, because not everybody who's listening to my podcast is on my email list, which means if I don't repurpose it, they're missing out on a great piece of content. So in that area, I definitely try to make my content as abundant as possible, which is going to go completely contrary to the lesson of this week's episode about creating scarcity in whatever it is you're doing, which I'll get into right on the other side of this. But first, I want to take a second and spotlight one of the members of the Free Market Squad. So every Saturday in the Free Market Squad Facebook group, I do something called Self-Promotion Saturdays, where I encourage everybody to self-promote, to let us know who they are, what they do, and where people can get more information. And each week I take one of the people that participated and I give them a little bit of a spotlight on the episode. And this week I'm going to shine the spotlight on Marky Ballantyne. And Marky is a voluntarist YouTuber, and he uses his YouTube channel to promote libertarian and anarchist ideas, and he shares a lot of his thoughts on politics in general. Marky's a great guy. I don't think he has anything to sell over there, which I wish he did. I wish he would try and brand himself a little bit better, maybe make some t-shirts or something. I know people would like to buy him from him, help support him out. He doesn't offer any way for people to support him out right now, though. Or to help him out right now, but maybe that'll happen in the future. But as of right now, the best thing that you can do for Marky is head over to his YouTube channel, check out some of his videos, and subscribe. His YouTube username is not Marky Ballantyne for some reason. Instead, it's Mike Rowe Rules 12. So MikeRowe Rules 12. Mike Rowe Rules 12. And apparently Marky's a big Mike Rowe fan. Go check out Marky on YouTube. Subscribe to his channel again, Mike Rowe Rules 12. And let him know that I sent you over there. Thank you, Marky, for participating. And if you want some free promotion for whatever it is that you're working on right here on the Nathan Frazier Show, join the Facebook group and participate in Self-Promotion Saturdays. Like I said, every week I take one person. It's random. I enter a number into a random generator, and I take that number and I apply it to alphabetically to whoever participated that week. And this week it was Marky. And if you want some free promotion, like I said, I didn't say this episode, but this show, just the downloads of it, usually close to 1,000 downloads. But then on top of that, it's aired on Truth Frequency Radio Network, UCY.TV, LRN.FM, and a whole bunch of micro AM and FM affiliates all throughout the United States. So potentially you could get your message heard by tens of thousands of people. So if you want that, if you want that opportunity for your business, go to freemarketsquad.com, get signed up, get access to the Facebook group, and take part or participate in the self-promotion Saturdays. It's a great way to get some free publicity for whatever it is that you're doing. So enough of that. Let's jump into how to use scarcity in your marketing. Now, like I said in the first part of the show, I kind of covered why I don't think scarcity is a bad thing. I'm not all for like artificial scarcity the way like De Beers does their diamonds, but I pretty much feel like I laid out a very good, compelling argument for why scarcity isn't something that should be avoided, and it's something that should be worked with instead of fought against. And in my opinion, it's something that you should not only work with, but you should be able to recognize it and be able to draw attention to it in order to get people to take the actions you want them to take. If something is scarce, or if you can show how something is scarce and it gets people to take the action that you need them to take, that they need themselves to take, pointing out that scarcity, agitating that scarcity, in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with that. And in fact, it's something that I do quite frequently. And I'm going to get into how I do that. But first, I'm going to kind of justify a little bit more. I'm going to tell you guys a story. So a few years back, 2013, my mom passed away. Actually, like right around this time, 2013, my mom passed away. And when she was alive, she leaned on me very heavily. They have something called a primary caretaker. So that meant I paid all of her bills for her. It meant that I was pretty much responsible for running her around, taking her to the store, helping her get her groceries, taking her to the doctor's appointments that she had. And especially after my brother died, my mom went through a big bout with depression and negativity. So a lot of times just listening to my mom constantly complain about all kinds of things. And to be honest, I'm not somebody who likes complaining. I'm not somebody who likes having complainers just pulling me down all the time. So there was times where having my mom around just drove me insane, and having to run her around and having to do all of the things that I did for her just really took a toll on me, really dragged me down. And sometimes I would react to it in ways that I'm not proud of. So me and my mom had blow up arguments quite a few times about me just not being able to give her the patience that I wish now that I was able to give her. But at the time it was maddening sometimes the amount of negativity that my mom would just permeate. But the truth of the matter is, if I could right now, I would trade every possession and every last breath that I have, if I could just go back and tell her that I love her just one last time, if I could tell her that how much she meant to me, I would trade everything I have for just one more moment with her to let her know that I loved her, and to try and just let her know that even though I lost my patience with her sometimes, and even though I wasn't able to give her the strength that she needed after my brother died, if I could just have one more moment with her, I would trade everything I have in the world for it. I miss her. And the truth of the matter is, we often don't appreciate things nearly enough when we have them. But once they're gone, then we realize how much we appreciated, how much we miss, how much we, I guess, didn't appreciate what we had when we had it. And in economics, people say that economics is logically driven, it's a science. I don't really agree with that. I think economics is much more emotionally driven than we'd like to think. Supply and demand, is not just a statement of logic. Supply and demand is, it's a statement about emotions. It's a statement about what drives us. It's a statement about what we value. And like I said, we tend to only recognize something's true value when it's scarce, when we no longer have it, when we don't have the abundant access to it that we wish we did. That's when we realize how much something actually means to us. That's when we realize how valuable something actually is. So to get off of an emotional subject and get back into the lesson here, how can you make this work for you in your marketing? If you've got something to sell, how can you get other people to recognize the value of what it is that you have to offer? How can you get other people to value what you have as much as they should, if they actually should? And the answer is simple. The answer is to add scarcity, to make something scarce, to point out and draw attention to the scarcity of something. So there's three common forms of scarcity that you can use in marketing, and I'm going to kind of go over how each one works and how you can apply them to whatever it is that you sell, and how you can increase the value, that the perceived value of what it is that you have to offer, by decreasing the abundancy or drawing attention to the limited abundancy of what it is that you have to offer. So the three types of scarcity that you can utilize in marketing are number one, urgency, number two, rarity, and number three, exclusivity. So I'm going to go through and kind of explain each one of them, how they work, and how you can utilize them. So number one, urgency. Urgency is time-based scarcity. It's scarce because it's only available for a limited amount of time. You might be able to find this item later, but you won't be able to find it here, and you won't be able to find it at this price. So just like that Michael Sinoff and Ben Settle promotion that I was talking about, it's typically, I could find it later for close to $500, but if I bought it on Labor Day, before midnight on Labor Day, I could get the entire course for $20. And yes, it would still be available later, but at a much higher price. So it was urgent that I acted on it. I needed to act on it right now. The form of scarcity that they had applied to that was urgency, the scarcity of time. And typically, if you tell people, hey, you have to buy this before this deadline or you'll miss out, they'll understand that it's a scarce resource. It's a scarce deal. And when something has urgency attached to it, we know that we have to act now or forever hold our peace, basically. So number one, urgency, time-based scarcity. Number two is rarity. Rarity is quantity-based scarcity. This is what most people think of when they think of scarcity. When you say scarcity, the first thing that people think of is rarity, because that's the most common understanding of the word scarcity. Rarity is the idea that only so many of these things exist, and thus they're more valuable than other options out there. So If a car company produces 1,000 models of one car a month, and then they only produce one model of a different car per month, that one model is going to be much more sought after because the market's not flooded with it, and because people that drive it around are looked upon with a different status symbol. Basically, just the fact that it's not as widely available, there's less in number, there's less quantity of it, so it's more scarce than other options that might be available to the market. And this is kind of an outdated it's so weird that we live in a world where something that was popular just a month ago is outdated. But Central Park, when people flooded Central Park looking for Pokemon Go Pokemons last month in the middle of the night, what gets people to do that is rarity. There was a rare Pokemon. People were just walking around normally looking for other Pokemons, but when they heard that there was a rare Pokemon in Central Park, they flooded Central Park. It wasn't just any old Pokemon that drove them to take such massive action. There was rarity involved. It was a rare Pokemon. So rarity makes something scarce. Rarity causes people to take action. Now, again, it has to be good for the people, because me not being a Pokemon player or trainer or whatever they call themselves would have made no effect on me. But if I was into Pokemon, that sense of rarity, that sense of quantity-based scarcity would have driven me to action. An example that I can relate to is Wheat Pennies. I have a collection of coins, not like anything fancy or something that I could sell and pay the mortgage off with, but I do collect Wheat Pennies. I have a decent sized collection of Wheat Pennies, and they're more valuable than equally weighed pieces of copper because they're rare, because Wheat Pennies don't exist very frequently. Same thing with pre-1963 dimes. Pre-1963 dimes, because they're made out of silver and because they're a lot more rare than the whatever dimes are made out of nowadays, pre-1963 dimes are worth almost $3 a dime, as opposed to regular dimes that are only worth 10 cents because they're so rare and because they're made out of silver. But pennies, wheat penny versus the same amount of copper, the wheat penny is much more valuable because it's so rare. So rarity is quantity-based scarcity. There's millions of Pokemon out there, billions of pennies out there, but when you find the rare one, you place more value on it because rare is scarce and scarce is valuable. Number three, the third type of scarcity that you can employ in your marketing is exclusivity. So exclusivity is scarcity, but it's scarcity based on status. So it's not that it's not widely available. It's not that it's only available for a little limited time. It's that it's only available to a limited type of person or a limited type of people. An item or a service itself may not be scarce, but the client who has access to it, or the customer who has access to it, is scarce. So think of like a Rolex watch or a Ralph Lauren shirt. I guess the Rolex watch would also be rarity, form of scarcity, but like the Ralph Lauren shirt, there's lots of Ralph Lauren shirts out there. They're not very rare, but the type of people that wear them are rare. So they're not like scarce in the real world, but because of the status that's applied to them and the type of people that typically wear those items are rarer individuals, they can be sold at way over the cost to produce. A Rolex watch does not cost nearly as much to produce as you can sell it for. A Ralph Lauren t-shirt or a polo shirt, like $5 worth of material and $10 worth of stitching, and then it turns around and gets sold for $60. It's because it has an air of exclusivity around it. It's because it has scarcity based upon status of the person who has access to it. Another example of this, rather than a product, but for an actual service, is like a therapist. So therapists might not be exclusive, but if a therapist who only books appointments with celebrities, like Therapist to the Stars, they're probably not better than other therapists out there. They're probably not, there's probably nothing that warrants them being paid 17 times as much as other therapists, but because they exclude their services from most people, since they niche down and they say, I'm only going to service this tiny percent of the population, and I'm going to exclude everybody else from being able to access my services. It allows them to charge way more to the people that they do accept. So exclusivity, which is scarcity based upon status, can just greatly increase the amount of profits that you can get off of whatever it is that you offer. So when you create scarcity with exclusive access, you drive up the value of whatever it is that you provide, not only in the minds of the people that you exclude, not only does saying, I only work with this particular type of client, not only does that make you look more valuable to the people who can't afford you or can't get access to you, not only does it drive up your value in their minds, it also drives up your value in the minds of the people that you do accept. Those people say, well, I have status, and this proves to me, you know, this by me being able to drive this car or wear this watch or go see this or go talk to this particular therapist, it proves that I have, better status, and it gives me access to something that's exclusive. It also drives up your value in their mind as well. So exclusivity, scarcity based upon status. That's kind of it in a nutshell. That's three ways to use different types of scarcity in your marketing to drive up the value of whatever it is that you provide. Like I said, I'm not for creating artificial scarcity, but if there is scarcity there, know how to leverage it. Know how to use it to your advantage. Know how to use it to increase the value of whatever it is you provide and draw attention to the value of whatever it is that you provide. So next time you run a sale, if you're going to do a limited time offer, make sure that you're consciously applying urgency. Next time you have a limited supply of something, make sure you point out the fact that this is a rare item and it's only going to be available while supplies last. Use rarity to your advantage. If you have something and you can't just give it to anybody, be very picky and choosy about who you give your service or your product to, and make sure that you can use the scarcity of exclusivity to your advantage. Whatever it is that you're selling, there's going to be some sort of scarcity with it. Instead of fighting that scarcity, learn how to work with it, learn how to appreciate it, and learn how to use it to your advantage. One last note, actually, on this, and this is kind of a funny side note. Companies often give free products to people with high status to kind of increase the exclusivity factor of their own products, so that if they know a superstar is highly influential, they'll give her a free Prada purse, or if they know a sports star is influential, they'll give him a new pair of whatever basketball sneakers they're about to release. But exclusivity can also work in reverse. So in 2011, Abercrombie and Fitch offered to pay the situation, Sorrentino, I believe, from MTV's Jersey Shore. They actually offered him money to stop wearing their clothes, to no longer be seen in their clothes, because exclusivity is just as much about who you choose not to serve as it is about who you choose to serve. So there you go. There you have it. Scarcity is not a bad thing. Scarcity is kind of like a double-edged sword. It has a side that can be used to cut and a side that can be used to serve. And it depends on how you use it. So don't fight against it. Use it. Again, if you enjoyed the show, go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review. That'll help get the show up in the iTunes rankings. It'll help introduce more people to the podcast, and I would really appreciate it. And just a last note, next week, hopefully, if everything goes according to plan, we will have David Garfinkel coming on the show to talk about the education system and marketing, selling, and copywriting, and that you don't want to miss that one. That one's going to be awesome. So make sure you're subscribed to this here podcast so that you don't miss that one. I am out of here, guys. This has been another episode of the Nathan Fraser Show, Anarchopreneur. To find more, go to NathanFraserShow.com. From there, I make it real easy to find my iTunes link, my Stitcher link, so you can subscribe from there. Yeah, that's about all I got to say. Until next time, Free Market Squad, faith in each other, not in authority. Be your own boss. Hashtag BYO boss. I'm out of here. Deuces.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
Are you a liberty-minded entrepreneur, small business owner, agorist, or freelancer? Do you ever struggle in your business and feel like you're all alone in the world? Can you imagine how great it would be if there were a community of freedom-loving business people just waiting to connect with you? Can you keep a secret? There is such a community. Free Market Squad is the online mastermind group for people who are passionate about freedom and success in life. Access to a mastermind group is probably one of the most valuable things you could have in your life, and membership in the Free Market Squad is absolutely free. If you have a Facebook account and you want more information on how to join the Free Market Squad, head on over to www.freemarketsquad.com. That's freemarketsquad.com.